One, two, three, four. Just another day at my dead-end profession. I'm living day to day. Yeah, listening to some good old country records on the radio. And yeah, what else can I say?
You're listening to the Degenerate Podcast. I'm Ryan Shores. Not with me, as usual, is Dave Callens. He had something else to do.
It's so much nicer in here.
It is. It's more pleasant. It feels like there's air in the room.
That's
you know
right.
What I mean? And that, of course, is Bobby Timothy right behind the soundboard.
Yeah, and I'm way less judgmental than Dave.
Now, this week, this guy is not only our guest this week, because Dave's not here, he's kind of a guest co-host.
Oh, hell yeah.
Mr. Dallas McLaughlin, everybody. Thank
Hello.
You for finally coming on the show.
Oh, I appreciate you having me.
Absolutely.
I know we tried to make it happen a couple times. So.
I think for about 2 years, yes.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's way better now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad Dave's not here. That's
we all are.
Usually I say no Daves on my podcasts. And so thank you for fulfilling that.
No problem. It was on his rider.
Yeah. I have a rider. It's that and Skittles.
No Dave and Skittles.
Yeah.
Couple things before we get into Dallas. He is promoting his new album. What's the title of it?
The album's called An Evening of This.
Evening of This.
Yeah.
Is it a hour long album?
It's close. It's like 45 minutes.
45.
And it's on iTunes right now, Amazon. Just go to iTunes and Amazon. I don't know.
All right.
Spotify, if you have Spotify. And I don't know how you download shit on Spotify.
Are you selling any physical copies?
No, not right now.
Okay.
I don't really like carrying things with me to shows.
No, me neither.
I'm sorry, Ryan is so 90s. Thinking about these physical things.
Listen, you got an 8-track there?
Yeah. It was a debate for a while. I was like, do I want to get... Because, like, I'm from the 90s.
Yeah.
I like holding CDs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, man, it would be cool to have my own
CD. And a
CD.
Lot of people are doing this thing now. They're going retro. They're putting out vinyl again, comedy albums.
Well,
I've seen a few guys do that.
That was a conversation I had, too. It was like, I have a guy and I could go through vinyl, but it's so expensive.
Yeah.
Unless you do like a big, huge order of vinyl. And then at that point, I'm like, I'm probably not going to sell this many records.
That seems like a hipster type thing. Like, they're just we want to do this to say we did it.
Oh, no, they go one step further. I know at least one guy that did a mixtape where he actually sells a cassette tape, and the cassette tape has like the link to the Spotify on the tape.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it is a digital thing, but you get a little
get a
something.
Hard copy.
Yeah. Originally, you got one of those original Edison wax cylinders that he started playing.
Yeah, really, if you pay enough, I'll just come to your house and do it for you. So it's fine. Yeah,
that's what's great about comedy.
Yeah, I go real old school. Vaudeville. That's where I go.
You know, it's funny. There's a friend of mine put out an album, a guy in Boston, and it did pretty well. And then a friend of his announces he's having a CD release party in, like, I think it was like 2 weeks or maybe a month. And after he announces this big album release party, he calls my friend who just put out an album. He goes, yo, how do you put out an album? he hadn't done any of the planning. He just wanted that party.
You know what's great, though, is I think that's actually a really great way to motivate yourself. Do you ever do that? You take on a project you don't know how to finish. You tell everybody you're going to do it, and then you just got to fucking figure your way through it.
Yeah.
Because it's a great motivation. If you can get that done, it's a great motivation of like, okay, now I got
to
figure this
out. I see more people wanting just to celebrate the victory, though.
Right.
Like, have you ever been to one of these where someone's like, hey, we're having a big party at Livewire Bar. Why? Because I've decided to go back to college. I'm like, that's not, no. No, I'll be there, but not with you.
Are there drink specials? Yeah. Maybe I'll go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't want to have like an album release thing. I thought about it. I was like, oh, well, when it comes out, I'll do a show and we'll celebrate it. But then I'm like, well, I won't have hard copies. So then it's just me telling people to go to the internet.
I assure you there's an album.
Yeah,
thank
so
you.
It's like, stupid. I won't. And it was better off. I did a show the night that it, or the day that it came out, I did a show here at the Madhouse.
Yeah.
But, I didn't talk about it.
You didn't promote it whatsoever.
I'm terrible at promotion, which is why we're here now.
Yeah.
Yeah. All you could land on was this show.
I should say so.
This is about as bad as you can get for promotion.
I hear you. Speaking of the runtime for your album, I think I might have to pull the plug on that Lakeside show I do.
Oh,
and here's
really?
Why. One main reason. It's not the area. It's not the people. The owner is one of these guys that has never done comedy in any capacity, but he knows better. You know, he knows how to, you know, what we should do. And he is insistent that I make the show anywhere from 2 to 3 hours.
Oh,
he's like,
that's the sweet spot right there.
He's like,
3 hours.
He's like, my friend, I'm paying you money. I want all that entertainment for my customers. I'm like, I understand that, but you have to see where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
I'm like, have you ever sat through a 3-hour movie? Even if it's a good movie, it's fucking taxing. Like, I can't expect your customers to pay attention to comics that they don't know for 3 fucking hours. But he's fighting.
Does he have an accent?
Yes.
Where's he from?
The Middle East somewhere, a nondescript Middle Eastern.
See, now they're used to comedy that takes a long time to get going. Yeah. It's going to be long, drawn out stories.
Yeah.
The punchline is Iraq War.
Yeah, you have to stop for like flyovers. It's like, it's a process out there.
Yeah, isn't that so frustrating? You've run rooms before.
Yeah, I'm running one right now.
Where is that?
It's in La Mesa, in the Village.
Ah.
It's called Public Square Coffee House.
Oh, that's right. You've chosen not to book me, but that's fine.
Oh, we did one show, asshole.
But have you ever had to run into that where you're dealing with an owner? It's like, okay, I also want an intermission. Like, you're making every mistake. And leave the TVs on, please. My customers want NFL.
Yeah.
You know what's weird? There's almost this weird mathematical formula where if you have a 90-minute show and there's 4 comics on it and one of them is bad, it's a good show.
Right.
If you have a 3-hour show and there's 8 comics on it and 2 of them are bad, everything is bad.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing where the longer you go, it only takes a slight amount of bad to turn that entire show bad, because eventually even a good comedian on hour 4.5 sounds shitty.
Yeah.
When I used to run the Blarney Stone for years and years, I ran it up a mic night, basically.
I used to go to it.
Yeah, you went there. It was really fun. But the bar was like, well, we start at 8:30 and we go till close.
Right.
And Allison had run it before me, and she ran it for years, and it kind of switched over from music to comedy.
Right.
During her tenure. And so when I took over, I wasn't doing stand up yet. But when I took over, it was just comedians coming in.
Yeah.
And it'd be like 7 comedians. And I'm like, whoa, I got to fill like 4 hours.
Yeah.
And most of these guys just started doing comedy like a year ago.
Right.
So it was.
And the more seasoned guys, they weren't there to do their act. They were there to work on their 3 new jokes.
Yeah. They wanted to just work on stuff. So it was really hard to do it. And then eventually I just realized, like, the longer I push back the start time, like, the better off it would be.
Yeah.
So I get there at 8:30, and then I'm like, yeah, we have sign-ups. It's real loosey-goosey. Yeah. And then, like, 10 o'clock, we'd start.
Yeah.
And then, when you get people in it, it's great. But then there was those folks who, like, would realize that if, like midnight hit, and we should be done by, like, 12:30. If midnight hit, they could show up then. And usually I'd be out of comics.
Yeah.
So they could just take the last 30 minutes. Cause I would like, yeah, just do whatever you want. I'd be drunk by then. I wouldn't care.
Right.
And I'd be outside. And so actually Chip Nicholson was like the best at that. He would always just show up randomly at midnight and be I'll do it.
I
don't care.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah, I'm just imagining Dallas like sabotaging certain things to just push off the start time. Like, Dallas, it's 9 o'clock. We got to start. Yeah, here he is pouring kerosene on part of the carpet. fire, help.
Yeah. Sorry. Call the fire department. This is going to be a couple hour delay.
You know what I liked about the Blarney Stone? It had the reputation for being the roughest room in San Diego, which was not true. It was, if they liked you, they loved you. I remember, like, that was the first, maybe only place where when I show up because they liked me there, I'd feel like a minor celebrity, because the little townies that always would go every week would be like, hey, you're here.
Norm!
Norm,
totally,
right.
Totally.
But if they didn't like you, they hated you.
Yeah.
Like, they would throw shit occasionally. Yeah. Like, so when people would be like, dude, you don't want to perform there. Like, that's a rough room. I'm like, oh, you suck.
Yeah,
I understand.
Yeah.
Like, that was just a telltale sign, because people that did well, they were like, I love that fucking room.
Yeah, my favorite story about that room is Dave Callens, actually. That he came for like...
Let me guess how they felt about Dave Callens.
He was pretty early on, to his credit, but he came for like 3 months in a row and just ate ass like every time. And then one night, he just destroyed. He did so well, and he never came back. He's like, I did it. Why would I come back? I did it.
I can't ruin this memory.
Yeah, it was funny. I'm like, that's, I respect that.
I remember this big fight that happened there one night when I was performing. What happened was, I was on stage, and there was this enormous drunk woman who was being loud, carrying on, yelling out, and annoying people, because, like I said, they liked me there. They wanted to hear me, so the patrons were upset.
Sure.
So anyway, I went off, and then RJ Darney got on. And,
oh, Rajan.
Yeah, we're going way back. Rajan, yeah. He used to go by RJ back then. I don't know if he still does. He won't answer my fucking calls.
He doesn't do comedy anymore, I think. I think he does real estate now.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
I did not know that.
I think he's flipping houses and then occasionally does improv.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I thought he was doing well or something.
He is doing well. He makes a lot of money.
Yeah.
He does real estate. Yeah.
In that industry, yeah. Anyway, but he gets on, and for those of you that don't know him, Rajan's a very timid Indian man. You know. So anyway, he gets on, and I really wanted to watch him because I always enjoyed his stuff.
Yeah.
And that lady starts carrying on again, and this time it's not my set, so I can feel free to go, hey, shut the fuck up. Mm-hmm. And she turns and goes, you're just mad because I didn't like any of your bullshit. And before I can say another word, this enormous guy, he's 6 foot five, maybe pure muscle. He's always in there. I forget his name.
Yeah.
He stood up. He's like, shut up, cunt. And her boyfriend, who's maybe 5'4", jumps up like Scrappy Doo and goes, wow. Hey, don't talk to her like that. He takes his open bear claw of a hand and palms him across the face as hard as he can. It's the only time in my life I've seen someone hit the ground over a open-handed slap.
Disrespectful slap?
Yes, but like that might as well have been a punch. The size difference, the velocity, and yeah. I just... Wow. Like it rang across the fucking bar.
He went all Boss Rootin on the guy. He did. Open hand.
My friend, bum. So, anyways, I'm doing a lot of those impressions today.
That was good.
But and all of a sudden this melee breaks out. The bouncers get involved. They clear almost everyone out. And then whoever is running it turns to Rajan, who's just standing on the stage watching this with his little microphone in his hand. They just turn to him and go, continue.
Yeah.
And he just like, ah.
Yeah, it was probably me telling him to continue.
I think it was you.
Yeah. There were nights definitely where I would just get drunk and walk outside and let somebody else take over for a while. I missed that room. We did it for like 3 years, and it was one of those things where there was fights a lot. Zoltan got into a fight there.
Zoltan?
Yeah, he got into a fight.
No.
Who?
It was some guy who was like a new comic, and he didn't last. And he was sitting there at the table... And Zoltan was up on stage, and the guy was like yelling at him, like jokes and stuff, and like trying to be involved.
Yeah.
And Zoltan sits down, and he starts telling him like what he should have done better.
Oh, you know? Wow.
And Zoltan's like, are you a comic? And I could be remembering this wrong, but this is what I remember. He's like, are you a comic? And he's like, oh, yeah, I do comedy. He's like, where do you comedy at? And he's like, I just started doing comedy. You know? He's like, oh, then you don't know anything. What are you talking about? And like Zoltan was like pretty mad at him and got up and left. Cause I don't even think at that point Zoltan was, maybe he had a beer, you know, yeah. But Zoltan's not like a drinker.
No.
And like he like left the bar and goes outside to talk to some other comics. And that guy, I guess, goes outside to talk to Zoltan some more. And somebody, I forget who, maybe it was Chip, got between Zoltan and the guy, and Zoltan reached around Chip and slapped him in the face. Not the guy in the face, another open...
A lot of open face. Hand
yeah.
violence.
Yeah, that was known for, I believe.
Yeah, well, nobody wanted permanent damage.
It was no, nice. Let's just rename that bar Pancrase.
Yeah.
But they fought, and they shoved and pushed back, and that guy, like, never came back in. There was a fight, too, where, like, Chip got into a fight. Somebody was trying to fight him from the audience, like, went to the stage. Bilodeau almost got into a huge
I remember
fight.
Bilodeau because it was like at that point I did not like Jeff. So and so when
that
he
was the time.
At that point I didn't like it. So, but even so, I remember thinking this. I'm like the guys that were threatening him. I was like, all right, I don't like the kid, but I really don't want this to happen to him because they were some scary dudes. I think they were like prospects for some sort of motorcycle club.
Probably.
They were gnarly looking dudes where even I would be like, ugh. And so like when they start, cause Jeff tried to bring him into the act, like, hey, these guys playing darts, not knowing what the hell's going on or some throwaway line. And those guys took it very seriously.
Yeah. Well, the bartender was this big dude named Johnny, and he was just this gigantic muscle guy, and he was super nice though. He was there forever, and he would bartend mainly on Sunday nights for open mic, and he was really funny. He like hated most of the comedians that came in because he was like, do new jokes. And anytime that he heard a joke he had heard before, he would ring the bell behind the bar.
Oh, wow.
Just to make the person mad. And then he came up to me and he was like, hey, one night he was like, hey, I know a lot of the comics. Like, and he pointed at Jeff. He's like, a lot of them like to go after the audience and talk to the audience and stuff. And he's like, I'm telling you right now, don't go to those guys. Like, don't reference those guys. Don't do it. He's like, they will not mess around.
Yeah.
They'll fucking kill you. And I was like, okay, cool. And so I went to Jeff and I was like, hey, man, I was just told by the bar, like that group over there
is off limits.
Just don't talk to them. Like, it's not a joke. They won't take it.
Yeah.
you know, and he's like, okay, cool. And Jeff's great. He's like, okay, cool. Yeah, thanks for the heads up. And then, of course, he gets on stage and immediately goes after those guys. And the guy stood up and he's like, I'll fucking slit your throat.
Yeah, that's
like,
what he said. I remember. Jeff. That's
and
what
I
he
was
said.
Like, oh, God. And, Jeff afterwards was like super apologetic. He's like, I don't know why I didn't listen to you. I'm sorry. And I'm like, I get it. Because you want the challenge. Like,
it's that big red button that says, do not push under any circumstances. Yeah. You're like,
you want it. You want to do it. So, like, you want to find the guy who looks like he's having the worst time and turn him around.
Make it worse.
Make it either worse for him, but everybody else is on board.
Yeah.
Or turn him around and get him involved. And if you can't make it work, you could die.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have to realize what area you're in, what bar you're in. You know, when I learned that early on in Imperial Beach. I didn't even say anything derogatory. I'm like, I at one point I saw a guy with a bald head wearing a Danzig shirt. Danzig's one of my favorite bands. I went, hey, Danzig, right on. And like afterwards he comes up and he's like, don't fucking bring me into your act, man. Don't you ever do that again. I'm like, huh? So
I'm Danzig.
He probably was short. If he was short, he might have been Danzig.
Yeah, no, he was short, so I wasn't that intimidated. So
yeah, man.
Another thing about harassment.
Oh, is that a segue?
It is a segue.
Oh, beautiful.
Being that what my fiance does, you know, with fetish modeling, I've seen online sexual harassment secondhand, but this week I got to see it firsthand. And here's how. I was running my room in Lakeside, and I don't know how to make flyers. I don't have Photoshop. I don't even own a computer. It's on my phone. So I don't.
He just found out about the internet a few episodes ago.
I did.
So.
Oh, it's a great, it's
incredible
life change.
There's a lot of things there.
Your album. So
exclusively.
Yeah. So anyway, when I promote a show that I'm running and I don't have access to someone to make a flyer for me, I do that thing on Facebook where I just make one post with the information in the header and then just everyone's picture just independently of each other. And then when you post it, it kind of looks like a flyer, you know, they're all together. So on the show, I had about 6 male comics, 1 female comic, an attractive female comic and flag. And anyway, I post this thing, all the comics share it, and all of a sudden I opened my phone a few minutes later and one picture of all of them has been liked like 50 times. And it's hers, of course. And I'm like, oh, and then I start getting comments because these guys, like whoever is doing this, these guys who aren't even on her friends list, I don't know how they saw it. They think that she's getting the notifications. Yeah. So like I'm at work and my phone's blowing up like daddy likey. Ooh. I'm like, these aren't going to her. They're going to me. So
you have to start responding like, oh yeah, what are you doing after work?
Yeah. Well, 7:30 to 9 over at the Better Days Pizzeria, then you can meet her and you know she'll be unaccompanied.
Wait, is that what the show's called? Better Days Pizzeria?
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's my favorite name for a pizza place.
Yeah. And it burned. It used to be a really good show, but the fucking place burned down.
That's why it's Better Days now. They're not on fire.
Yeah. After the insurance, it's Better Days.
Literally any day we're not actively burning to the ground is a better day than the one used to be.
That's a Lakeside. That's like a Lakeside credo. Any day, it's not all burning to the ground.
Any day where I don't have a knife sticking out of my tummy, that's a good day. But anyway,
I don't know Anne Flagg. I think we just became friends on Facebook, but I don't know her.
Riverside comic.
Oh, so, that figures.
Yeah.
I'm going to. I live in Riverside County now, so.
Oh, you do? Yeah. Where at?
I live in Temecula. We just moved to Temecula.
Oh, really?
Yeah, man.
How do you like it up there?
I love it.
Yeah?
I love it.
It's one of those places where I'm like, it's so far from everything, but look at the house I could get for what I got mine for.
We were living in a 2-bedroom apartment in Vista. And we're paying like a couple hundred bucks more a month, and we have a 3-bedroom house with a fireplace and a garage and a huge backyard. And I'm like, yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Where are you doing work up there? Because Rocky shut down.
Shut down. So I just do it on the corner. I just go to the corners, and I just start telling jokes.
That's a good way to do it. You got a soapbox? You stand on it?
Yeah, I get a soapbox, and I get stuff thrown at me, but it's usually nice things. People up there are nice. So I'll get like a dollar or maybe a sandwich. And
and of course, they only use open hand strikes.
Yeah,
that's right. And only when you heckle him.
Yeah.
No, I don't work up there at all. I mean, Johnny Herrera, actually, he probably books me most out of anybody up there, but was doing that before I lived there.
Yeah.
Because he runs a couple of really fun rooms, like Shamrocks and Murrieta's awesome. And he always has a room somewhere.
Yeah.
And which is awesome.
There's always that guy. I'm like, how do you have?
How do you do it?
How do you run 8 bar rooms?
Well, you know why he's smart? Because he's a DJ too. Mm. Like he has a whole DJ setup. So he's smart because he'll go, yeah, we'll do comedy for an hour and a half and then I'll DJ the rest of the night for you. And like, that's a genius way to do it. Cause then he gets to do some jokes and have some comics and do something he likes and then play some music for everybody.
That's great.
And he's a good dude, man. And so he books me up there. And yeah, I've talked to, because now Trenton lives up there.
Trenton Davis.
Paul Ogata lives up there now.
Okay.
And so I was talking to those guys, and Trenton and I kind of talked a little bit. We were thinking about putting something together up there. So the three of us might do something up there.
I never understand the guys that can handle running multiple bar weekly shows and multiple of them. Like, cause there are those guys, and me, I run one monthly bar show and I'm like, oh God, I gotta pull the plug. This sucks.
I hate it, man. I hate it. The only reason why I did this new show in La Mesa Public Square was because the owner of the place was a friend of mine. It looked cool. It's a cool neighborhood. Like, it could really do well.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, you can book it. And he gave me a nice budget to work with. And
yeah.
That's the only reason why I said yes.
I feel like every time I run a bar show, I'm always apologizing to everybody. I'm going to the comics. Like, I'm so sorry about this. You know, I didn't know. Then I'm going to the owner. I'm so sorry about that. There's no one here at your bar. But then I have this revelation. Like, why am I sorry to any of these people? I didn't do anything wrong.
Well, the best thing is when you walk into a bar show and they're always like, I don't know, man. Last month, it was the best.
Yes.
It was like packed.
Oh, no.
You know,
you couldn't
even get people in here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
we had
full.
People swinging from the rafters. It was crazy.
I don't know what happened this time around, you know? And I'm like, oh, that's not true. I know it's
yeah,
not true.
That
like,
can't.
It's
that can't
okay.
Be true.
You don't have to do this dance with me,
yeah,
man.
No.
Like, I've been doing this long enough.
You know what sucks is if you run a show and that does happen? Because we used to run the Kumite, and every once in a while, it would fill up. It would pack, and we couldn't figure out why. It wasn't like it was a certain holiday. We didn't do any extra advertising. It's just some fucking thing hit and there would be 50 people in there.
Yeah.
The next week there'd be four.
Yeah.
And you're like, I swear to God, last week it was good. And they give you the, yeah.
Right. But
yeah,
you know, the thing is, I don't understand why promoters do that because it doesn't make me feel any better. I don't know what they're trying to do.
It makes you feel worse.
That's like, it does.
True.
Here's what it's like. It's like, if you miss a party, if you had to stay home with your girlfriend and then your friends tell you like, oh, dude, the Brazzers truck showed up and all the porn stars got up and they're doing this like, hey, we're randomly fucking people thing. Everyone got like, you missed it.
Yeah,
you missed
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be there like, yes, nice. I'm happy for you.
That is a good point. I think it's the self-defensive nature of like, I'm so sorry this is happening. This is not how it usually is.
Well, that's why I like to really prep people. I'm like, listen, I'd love you to do my room. It's real light. There's a chance no one will be there, but I'd really love to have you.
Well,
and then they're not disappointed when they get there, you know? They're like, oh, this is what you said it would be.
Well, if you go and you're saying like, hey, come do this bar gig, like, I just assume it's not going to be full.
Right.
Like, and that's not insulting to anyone who books it. Like,
yeah, no.
There are like three really great independent rooms in San Diego, and that's the three. And everyone else wants to be one of those three.
Right.
And if you're not, you're not. So it's cool. You might, like Public Square in La Mesa. We had a nice turnout for the first show. It wasn't packed. It wasn't empty.
Yeah.
Next month, hopefully it'll be a little fuller.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right.
But like, you know, like I'm going to assume that comics who are coming in are going to know, have the wherewithal to be like, you know what? It's probably not going to be like, hey, it's so hot in here because there's no air because it's so packed.
Yeah.
You know? But then like, I'm so self-deprecating. Like I hate myself so much all the time that like when I walk into a room and somebody's like, oh man, I don't know what happened. Last week was so packed. I immediately assume it's because my name was on the flyer. Like, oh shit, Dallas. No. We're not going tonight.
And aren't they kind of implying that when they say, last week it was great because Zoltan was here. Then we put you on the flyer and no one came.
It would be great if you got to see out the window as a bunch of people were excitedly walking up and then checked the flyer and they're like, Dallas, and turned around in disgust.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, Dustin Nickerson was here last week and literally three church groups pulled up in buses and they unloaded. I don't know what happened.
They carried him out on their shoulders.
Yeah,
it was crazy.
Like, oh,
yeah, then this happened.
Yeah. Sorry. We got a traffic that you were talking about getting harassed online.
Well, that was pretty much all of it. But, you know, I mean, I appreciate.
Don't you think? I see your posts all the time and I got some fucking beef with them. I'm just kidding. I see your posts and I agree with most of them. But don't you think there's like a limit to like human understanding? Like, don't you think there's a point where you're like, listen, I get that this is going to be the thing that, like, harassment will never end.
Right. Right.
It's not going to end.
Sure.
Like, racism will never end.
Right.
And you could be like, well, in France, they don't have it. Yes, they do.
Yeah.
And in England, they don't have it. Well, it's a little less. It's a little more classism than it is racism out in England. So it's a different kind
of heard of a skinhead because they came from there.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it can be different, but it's always like, and I feel, but that's the thing is like, unless you say that we should never have, any kind of harassment online, unless you actually say that, and people just assume you're okay with it. I'm not okay with it, but I'm also a realist that I know it's not going to – like if you are a woman and you post a picture of yourself in a skimpy bikini online, guess what's going to happen?
Right.
And do you know why? Because that's the way the fucking world works.
That's right.
Like if I was – if I post a picture of myself in swim trunks online, people would make fun of how fat I was, how terrible I looked naked. And I know that, so I don't do it.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's not that I go, we should live in a world where I can post a picture of my fat ass and no one should ever make fun of me, and that's the world I want to live in. Well, then great. Then either kill yourself and live in that world, or just assume that this is the worst. The internet is the worst place ever. It is horrible.
It's full of anonymous cowards that can say whatever they want with no repercussions.
Or people that you knew in high school that will say whatever they want.
Yeah.
I have this buddy of mine that I knew when I was 14, and he posts the most gnarly responses to things I post. Like, just out of nowhere, horrible. Like
negative or...
Yeah, and just like with... like, you know, I'll be like, hey, man, I saw the moon tonight. And he'd be like, yeah, well, fuck you and your moon. And I'm like, whoa! You know, and like... But I think it's kind of funny, but my wife is always like, dude, why does that guy do that? And I'm like, I don't know. But I also don't care. Like, I expect it. Right. It doesn't bother me.
I don't think
it's all right. That's the thing. I don't think it's okay for a woman to get harassed.
Right.
At all.
Yeah.
People are monsters and horrible, and it shouldn't happen, but it does. And so at some point, there has to be kind of this like move where we're all come to the middle in a place called understanding.
Right.
And I don't know if we're ever going to get there.
Well, I think what you do is you mock those that act out of line, right? So you got somebody harassing her. You guys, everybody else gets together and mocks that guy openly, and then it's almost like vigilante justice, the cause has been solved. What I think is funny, and I believe this was a post you put up a while ago, was about bullshitting with other comedians and how it doesn't get as accepted as it used to be. Like, you used to be able to bullshit.
Yeah.
And I remember I read this when you said it. I'll be perfectly honest. In the back of my head, I was like, oh, it's old man Dallas telling us kids. And then I started experiencing it. And then we famously, I had a big one recently with a guy who sent me like 30 straight private messages because he didn't like one of my posts.
And because he's
like,
unstable.
Yeah, because he's unstable.
Well, more mental illness than the post.
And his entire point was like, how dare you make fun of my idea? Because he posted something on my wall and I was like, that's a stupid idea. Let me show you why. And he's like, how dare you? You should not make fun of my ideas. And I was like, you're a fucking comedian.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, a couple things. Number one, you hit on it right there, that there's a middle ground. There's a level called understanding. The way I see most of the world is people that arguing whether getting hypothermia or burning to death is better. in the shower. Let's say, there's a very finite amount of people going, you know, there's lukewarm. You know, that's pretty. You ever take a hot bath? Like, oh, so you're saying freezing to death is better? No, I'm saying lukewarm. Like, oh, so you're saying burning to death is better? I'm not saying any of that shit. So there's that. And the way they trap you now is the, like, I'll just use this group, like the hypervigilant feminists, you know? And I'm not shitting on feminism in any way, but the hypervigilant ones where, you know, I made this analogy very similar to yours where someone said, I should be able to post a picture of me in a bikini and not be harassed. And I said, I should be able to walk through Compton in the middle of the night with a transparent trash bag full of money and not be mugged.
Yeah.
But that's not going to happen. And then it turns into, so you're saying I'm asking for it? Like, oh shit, I don't want to.
Wait. But then they're implying that you're asking to be robbed.
Right? And then that turns into, oh, so what you're saying is I should be raped? Like, no.
But we are all asking for it because in the back of our heads, we all know the answer to these questions that we're posing. And so, like, that's the thing where I get super frustrated because I deal with it all the time. Listen, I'm a Republican. Mm-hmm. I'm a registered Republican.
In a comedian circle with a whole bunch of very left-wing
people.
But
I don't care, though, because I'm in no way underlined 1,000 times support Trump or Paul Ryan or Rince Priebus. When I joined the Republican Party, I joined the Republican Party because I really, really loved what Ron Paul was doing and what he was saying and his honesty about our money and how it's going, or we're going to debt and the wars that we're starting. And he wasn't saying, hey, we shouldn't be going to war. He was just telling you why we're going to war and the honest truth behind it. And I watched him in the debates and I was like, God, this guy's awesome. I want to be able to vote for him in the primary, so I switched parties from independent and became a Republican because I wanted to vote for him. And then I stuck within the Republicans because I believe in both things. I believe in the Democratic philosophy of saying, hey, we should help people. Like, you help people. Healthcare, all that stuff. Sure, help people. But I also believe in the Republican ideas, some of them anyway, where they're saying, hey, personal responsibility is also good.
Yeah.
And so I believe in both those things. Mm-hmm. I would love to help people, but only to a point. There's a point where you're like, hey, man, I can only help you so much because so now
more of
I'm
a,
broke.
You're more of a centrist leaning right.
Yeah, I'm a centrist leaning right. And I lean right only because I Bill Maher actually did an amazing thing on this a couple weeks ago on Real Time, where he posted this thing about how in the last 10 years – being a Democrat basically means you're apologizing constantly for saying stuff. And it was an amazing segment. And it made me feel like that's the reason why I kind of don't lean towards them, is because, like, people are going to say what they're going to say, and you can't always apologize. Yeah. Instead of apologizing, let's teach people how to deal with these things. Like, let's teach people how to understand it. And, like, we all know, like, if you walk through Compton with a thing of money, like, maybe it's a racist thing for you to say as a white guy that you're going to go through there and get robbed. Maybe.
Yeah.
And maybe if you post a picture of yourself on all fours in a bikini, maybe somebody's going to say something negative. But we all know the answer to these questions.
Right.
We just don't want to, one, be honest with ourselves about the answer.
Yeah.
And two, confront, like, any kind of negativity towards it. And it's a pain in the ass, man. And so if I ever say anything about Trump, or anything, it's always like, or if I say, oh, Hillary, you know, Hillary would have done this, like, oh, so you support Trump?
Yeah.
No, that's, it's not Hillary or Trump. It's not that anymore.
Yeah.
It's that we have a madman as our president and none of us should be okay with it.
Yeah.
And the fact that if I'm not okay with it, then I obviously supported this other woman that I did not support.
Right.
Then it's like, it's just, I can't handle it anymore.
Right. It's okay to cherry pick, man. It is. People use cherry pick as a pejorative term, but really I'm like, that's the only way I feel that you're not a fool is if you're thinking for yourself by saying, I like this from the right, I like this from the left, sure, and those are my ideas. I think the biggest fool is someone that says, all right, I belong to that party, so everything they do, I agree with. That's,
yeah, right.
I think that's the biggest.
That and I believe in this, so therefore I cannot change my mind. Because that's one of the things that you come into, you know, is the problem that I had with that comedian online. I'm sure you've experienced this too, is people personify themselves in their ideas. And so when you start saying this is a bad idea because of this, this, and this, they take it as a personal attack.
Yeah.
Like, how dare you go against this? And it's like, I'm going against it because you're factually incorrect.
There's a great movie, great movies, tough term, but there's a good movie called Primary Colors, came out in the 90s, where it's like it's supposed to be about the Clinton campaign, mm-hmm, and John Travolta plays Jack Stanton, who's supposed to be
Jack Stanton.
Bill Clinton, and it's this weird movie, but it's really fun if you like politics. But there's a line he says in a debate that's taken from a Bill Clinton line in one of the debates, which is where they're going around all these people in the primaries, the Democratic primaries, are saying stuff, and he's like, I like that, I like that, and then somebody goes, hey, what are you against? And he's like, I'm against doing nothing while people are suffering. I'm against saying an idea is bad because I didn't come up with the idea.
Right.
And I'm like, God damn, can't we have more people talk like that?
Right.
Yeah. Like, can't we have more people come out and be like, hey, I don't have all the answers, man.
Yeah.
Like, this guy's idea is way better than mine. And I'm going to say, let's do that because I'm in a power position to enact that idea.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I wish that people chose things a little more wisely than, just clear cutting. Like, I'm right, I'm left, and that's it.
Throwing back to a few topics ago is, I forgot to tell you, I got called a homophobe.
Ooh.
Because I called bullshit when this, woman who's married to a man, says that she was, she's persecuted every day for being a bisexual woman. I'm like, no, you're not. No, you're not. Yes, how do you know? Cause I know, and no, you're not. I'm like, first of all, you're married to a man. How do they know? Do you walk around? Do you just go into fucking places and go, I also like vagina? And when they ask you to leave, do you think that's why?
Let's be honest. She's going to get treated pretty well for that, right?
Yeah. You know, and so, and like the line I flat out said with her, I'm like, listen, if you walk into one of those horrible homophobic cake stores in the Midwest that won't serve with your straight white husband, you're walking out with a fucking cake. Okay. So unless you start with, you know, saying, by the way, did you know?
Also, I kind of view all women as being bisexual just on a sliding scale. So
I don't, it's been years since I met one that wasn't at least slightly bisexual.
I have nothing to add to this. I'm married. I'm married. I have nothing to add to
this. As am I.
Oh, there you go.
I will be soon. And she's bisexual, and she's not persecuted at all for it. At fucking all. So
you brought up a thing a while ago about comedians, like, you know, me saying what happened to comedians when we talk shit to each other. And
yeah.
I mean, that's a tough one because, like, talking about the Blarney Stone, like, when I came up doing stand-up, and I came up at the Blarney Stone, we did comedy at a bar, and it was, like, seven or eight of us. And it was, we were there every week.
It was like a club.
It was
more
a club.
Than a show.
And it was, you became buddies. And like you, like when I brought people up, like I didn't bring them up like, oh, this next guy is one of the funniest guys in San Diego. Blah, blah, blah. I would bring them up like, this next guy is an asshole.
Yeah.
He's going to tell you the dumbest jokes ever and he's a horrible comedian. Please welcome RJ Darney.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and that was just kind of the way we did things.
Right.
And,
cause it's funny.
Cause it's funny. And no one in the crowd is going to, like, no one from NBC just showed up and was like, oh, he's an asshole? Well, I'll be leaving now. Like,
right.
It's never going to happen. And so the problem, though, is that as I've gotten older in comedy, I mean, I've only been doing stand-up for like 7 years now, but, you know, there's the classes that come in and the younger classes and the younger classes. And sometimes, like, I just get comfortable with people in a sense because, one, I think they're funny or I think that they're, you know, they seem like good people. And so I'll, you know, give them some shit because that's, like, what I do.
Yeah.
And
it's
and
a sign of affection.
Yeah. And afterwards I realized like, oh, like I don't know them that well.
Right.
And they don't know me hardly at all. And they're probably looking at me from a different point of view because I'm an older person and maybe, and I'm not saying they're like, oh, he's so good at comedy, but like I've just been doing it longer. So maybe they think I'm like trying to like, you know, alpha male them or something, and which is so far from the truth. And so then I like end up apologizing because I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be if I was a dick, like I definitely didn't mean to be one. And then I'm like, why am I apologizing? Like, it's just like this ever rotating thing of like, can't we all just be okay that we're comedians and that we all chose the wrong profession?
And that yeah. And the culture is one of, hey, let's fuck around. Like that, that is the fun part about being a comedian. I've said this a bunch of times. If I needed to, I could quit stand-up comedy. I'd never be able to quit hanging out with comedians.
Well, that's the thing. David Tell has the best thing ever where he's like, I wanted to be a comedian because I didn't want to wake up before 2 p.m.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's true. You know, like you just wanted, you want a life of nonsense.
Yeah.
Otherwise, why are you doing it? Like the people who take comedy so seriously, where they wake up every morning and they grind and they hustle and they and I get it. There's a way to do it and they can do it that way and maybe they'll be successful, maybe they won't. But I'm like, so you're taking all the joy out of it. It's like the joy is that we're doing this as buffoons.
Yeah.
Like, we're clowns.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You think Dean Martin woke up and like hustled around all day long and like made a bunch of phone calls? Like, no, he got drunk and he wandered onto a set 10 minutes before.
You know, I had this realization thinking about my own life recently because I was thinking about all my track record of things I've wanted to be, my pipe dreams. And at 18, I wanted to be a musician, failed. From 19 to 23, I was actively trying to be an MMA fighter, failed. And then and at 23, I became a comedian. And so, and the thing is, I looked at that, I'm like, okay, I understand me a little bit better now. I want something interesting I can daydream about. That's pretty much it.
Sure.
And if I resign myself to the office job forever, I could handle it. But the part I couldn't handle would be not being able to daydream while I'm in my cubicle. Because any day job I've had, I've been able to go, well, once I make it as a comedian or once I make it as an MMA fighter, I don't have to put up with this anymore.
Sure.
Now, I may be realistic that that'll never be true, but you know, there's a little scrap I can gain to be like, maybe someday things will work out nice for me.
Or it just makes you happy, right? Short fucking life.
Yeah.
You're here and then you die
and
you better go out and do something that makes you happy every once in a while. Otherwise, you're going to be a really sad, depressed person. And I think for the most part, comedy makes people happy, especially if that's what you're supposed to do. You know, if you're supposed to do it the first time you're on stage and get a good laugh, you know, oh shit, this is what I've been missing. And I think one of the problems becomes when somebody gets super sensitive about themselves and doesn't want to take jokes, you have to question, like, are you really funny?
Right.
B, do you get what this is, being a comedian and stuff? And C, how fucking serious do you take yourself?
I had a comic come at me because 7 years ago, I gave him a bad intro when I was emceeing. 7 years ago.
That's crazy.
This guy, let's just call him Dick. like we got into a small little argument and all of a sudden I got out of nowhere. He's like, 2010, we were doing Pacific Beach. And I remember the intro I gave and it was true. I was like, this next guy was the MC when I did my very first open mic. I bombed and he sure let me know it afterwards. Please welcome Dick.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, is that terrible? And he's like, you made them feel about me a certain way, and I could not have a good set after you buried me with that intro. I'm like, huh?
Then you're not a good comedian. That's the way it works. You can't take the audience back after an intro.
I was just like confused, but I'm like, you've been hanging on to that for 7 years?
The first show I ever did in L.A., the host brought me up is Dennis McDonough. And I'm like, that's it. That is a real person, not me.
Dallas like, is just sitting there, like, McDonough. Looking over his shoulder, like, thought like, I was on next.
I think
next.
Greg was there actually too. I think Greg Santos was there when that happened because then afterwards he just called me Dennis for like a week. It was like this funny running joke, but it was like, Yeah, dude, come on. If you can't get over an intro, like, then get over comedy. Like,
right,
comedy.
Right.
Like,
the only thing that I...
Unless some guy's like, oh, this next guy's a fucking asshole. Fucking, yeah. Like, just goes after him.
Unless there's, like, someone who regularly says the same thing about you each time. And I'll give you an example. Rocky from, you know, Marietta, yeah. He would always bring me up by saying, this next guy sounds like Batman. And I'd come up, and then I'd start to... They didn't know who I... And before I get on stage, then they hear me talk. And now everyone, instead of listening to my first three jokes, is laughing that, oh, he does sound like that. Oh, listen to him. So it would bury my first three. So I started telling Rocky, hey, from now on, could you wait to say that after my set? And then be like, didn't that guy sound like Batman? I think you'll get a bigger laugh and they won't like miss my first.
Yeah.
But I'm not like, you son of a bitch. You absolute son of a bitch.
Yeah. You have to be able to take that rejection. You have to be able to take a little bit of insult and ribbing. Otherwise, you're never going to get anywhere. And it's funny how you always seem to see that the people who are super successful are the ones who can take shit. Like, for instance, Dallas, you got probably the most successful gig any of us could talk about. You got to be on TV on PBS, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, the money came rolling.
Yeah, that good yeah, PBS yeah. money.
I think I bought, like, some shirts.
How did you get that?
Did you do a telethon with Big Bird?
You had a show called Film in Diego.
Yeah, Film in Diego. It's we might do a second season. I know they're still talking about it.
How did you pitch it? How did you get that?
Well, so I didn't pitch it. One of the few times that... I wasn't involved in the process. There's a group called the Film Consortium in San Diego. Mm-hmm. Jody Silly runs that, and it's a great group. And they just finished their San Diego Film Week. I think it was like the first ever San Diego Film Week. And she's got this great bold vision for San Diego film, and she's awesome. I love Jody. She had seen me on Tonight in San Diego a couple times, do some segments, and was casting this show, Film in Diego, and she was it was kind of recommended through people that I reach out to her and say, hey, I heard you're looking for a host. And she was like, oh, yeah, I've seen you on Tonight in San Diego. Love you. I have to come down. So I went down to the audition. It was like me and like six other people. And basically, like, the audition, they had this script, and and they were like, you know, you say this, and then you're going to interview somebody. And I was like, okay. And so I go in, and it's this group. I mean, it's room full of people. Like, there was like 30 people in the room that were there to like hold the camera and mic you and all that stuff. It was right at the time. It was through like a San Diego State Film School kind of thing. So like there were students in there, and it was like it's a long story, but like I was there. And so they bring this guy up for me to interview. I do the friggin' script. I interview the guy, and you know, so it's just me riffing with somebody, which is like, you know, easy for me to do. And I kind of start making fun of them a little bit, and people are into it, and they like it, and it starts getting laughs and stuff, and then like, thanks, all right, cool. And then the director starts talking to me about stuff, and he was like, well, you know, we just want to like get to know you. Like, what do you like to do? And I was like, well, I like to drink beer. And he's like, oh, yeah. He's like, you like IPAs? And I was like, no. And then I just like went, and I had just written this whole bit about how much I hate IPAs.
I love your IPA bit because I hate them too.
Yeah. So like I just written that bit like maybe 3 weeks before. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to launch into the bit. And so I launched into the bit, and like I had the room, and I left, and then they called me like 2 days later, and like, want you to come to callback. We're going to send you a script. Feel free to make it your own. And so I'm a writer. And so I said, okay. And I took the script and I rewrote a lot of it and put in jokes and changed this and changed that. And I came in. Punched it up. And I did it for them. And they were like, and Jody was just like, oh, yeah, that's like way better. And I'm like, oh, thanks. And she's like, yeah, that fits you. And she's like, yeah, whoever we hire, you know, we definitely want them to help write the show because we want it to be in their voice. She's like, do you have experience as a writer? And I was like, well, I have like an Emmy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she was like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, so I
Wait,
do.
You have an Emmy?
Yeah, I have two.
For what?
I have one for the Aquabats and one for Yo Gabba Gabba.
Oh, wow. I didn't know you wrote for Yo Gabba Gabba.
Yeah, I wrote music and segments and stuff like that.
I did not know that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I I heard this thing. I don't know if you were on the show at this point where, you know, Bam Margera from Jackass, they pitched him to be on the show, and he's like, what do you want me to do? And they sent him the next email was a link to Lou Diamond Phillips doing something called the Peanut Butter Dancy Dance. He's like, oh, no, I can't do that. I don't dancy dance.
It was probably the funnest set to ever be around.
How did you get involved in that?
That was actually through music.
Wow.
So, yeah. So some people can be successful.
So you've succeeded in all the things I failed at.
He's going to beat your ass later in an MMA fight.
Yeah, right. Success in music is questionable on my end. I had a band for a long time, and we were called Bad Credit, and we had a lot of fun playing in San Diego, and we got connected with the Aquabats through our manager. We played a show with them in San Diego when they came to San Diego, and we were like big fans of the Aquabats. And they were like,
"Is this Travis Barker or Aquabats?"
No, it's post Travis Barker. And so we love the Aquabats, and if you ever seen them live, you know that they do like they have villains come on and they fight the villains on stage.
Wow!
And so they knew they saw our show and they're like, "Hey, you guys are great on stage. Like, would you want to be the villains tonight for the show?" And I like my little 17-year-old mind was blown, even though at the time I was like 27. But I was like. I was like, oh my God, yeah, I was so excited. And so we did the villains and we had a lot of fun. And they're like, hey, we're playing Pomona tomorrow night. Would you guys want to come play with us tomorrow night? And we're like, yeah. So we came the next night and that was just our relationship.
Nice.
And we went on tour with them and they, at the time, were developing the Aquabats Super Show. And then they had another idea for this little show called Yo Gabba Gabba.
Right.
And so the music in Yo Gabba Gabba was all hip hop based. And our band Bad Credit was hip hop based. Hmm. And so they said, you know, would you guys want to help write some music for Yo Gabba Gabba? And we're like, yeah, sure. So we like wrote some music. And then a couple years later, they made the pilot and they invited us on to help with the pilot. And that's kind of where it started.
Okay. And so you won your Emmy for a specific song or just overall the show?
So I won overall episodes. Okay. So it's like, so the producers get the hardware. We get certificates that are very nice and make dad feel happy.
Hey, that's still, call yourself an Emmy winner. I love that.
Well, of course, because yeah. I did. I have a paperwork to show you.
Yeah.
The people who put the money in, they get the nice trophies. Yo Gabba Gabba was like for an episode, and then Aquabat Super Show was for an episode. And then we were nominated. I was nominated personally for one. Daytime, though, let's be careful. And, Jimmy Fallon isn't giving me an award. And so that's how I got involved in writing and TV was through
what do the
music.
Daytime Emmys look like?
I never went.
You did? Why didn't you go?
Well, we weren't invited.
So you were nominated for an Emmy, but not invited to the ceremony. That's a pretty clear sign you're not going to win.
Who do they give the invites to, by the way?
It's a very small room. And,
is it like the soap opera stars are there?
Okay. It's all soap opera stars. It's
Mr.
Like
Rogers when he was alive.
Nickelodeon people. It's very silly.
Wouldn't that be a great mixture if it was like, especially if it was like Mexican soap opera stars? Because it'd just be a whole bunch of busty 27-year-olds and then the Nickelodeon crew of 12-year-old boys.
Have you ever watched one of those daytime Mexican talk show variety show things?
No, I'm gainfully employed. I'm at work during that time.
Hey, listen, I have been in many a hotel room with three channels while working the road gigs. I'm like, and I've parked it on those things. It's insane. Like, I don't know what they're saying. Yeah. I fancy myself to know a little Spanish, but then people start talking actual Spanish. I'm like, oh, I'm lost. Yeah. But it's like, okay, it'll be the hottest, like you said, busty 27-year-old chick going cutty 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 and doing a dance, and then like a dude in a brown suit who's overweight will come over and start interviewing her about the dance, and then like a clown on a tricycle will just start circling him and throwing confetti. I'm like, what is happening?
It's like David Lynch produces all Mexican soap operas.
Yes, it's amazing. You get lost. I go down the rabbit hole. Like 3 days later, it's all I've watched.
Yeah, it's incredible. I love watching those shows. Yeah.
I remember a story where at the Daytime Emmys, Mr. Rogers won, and he made everyone sit there in silence and think about someone who'd helped them. For his entire speech, he just like looked at his watch.
I love Mr. Rogers, man. Oh. There's a great moment on Mr. Rogers where they give him some award or something like that, and there's a segment that he did when he was with the show. He had some kid, like a quadriplegic kid, come out. And he was like talking to this kid, and he had this disease. And
the clown started surfing on a tricycle.
All these balloons lifted the wheelchair.
Busty chicks jumping in the background.
No, it's amazing. He did this segment where he's like talking to this kid and telling this kid, like, you know, your mom and dad love you, and you can do whatever you want. But no, it was, but listen, it was like an endearing moment between this.
I didn't say, oh, God, in a like, oh, lame. It's more like, I would have cried.
Well, no, I was like, and then so then they flash forward to like 20 years later, and this kid's grown up. And he comes out in the wheelchair to surprise Mr. Rogers to give him this like lifetime achievement award, right? Mr. Rogers stands up from the crowd and doesn't even like go up the stairs, like walks, like climbs up the stage to get to this kid.
Oh, wow.
And just goes after the kid. And I was bawling. I'm like, oh my God, Mr. Rogers, you're amazing.
That is one thing where like, with the whole Bill Cosby thing, that's the one thing I'm like, please don't let there be anything. Please.
Oh, for Rogers?
Yeah, for Mr. Rogers.
I think he was like a World War II guy too.
No, that was a rumor.
Oh, okay.
No, he was a pastor that worked on Pittsburgh TV. I did look into that. Cause I heard he was like a sniper and he had tattoos under his.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, not true. But like the thing is, when I started looking into it, I'm like, really? I don't want to dig any further. Yeah, I don't want to find anything.
It's true. You don't, man. You really, really don't. Because there's going to be some.
Yes.
So, Dallas, you have some albums or shows to plug coming up. when's your show?
You can
in
follow
La Mesa?
Me on Twitter at Dallas_MC, and I post all my shows there. So at Dallas_MC. The show in La Mesa, the next one is March 23rd. Trenton Davis is actually headlining.
Is it the third Thursday, first Friday?
It's what is that? The third Thursday, I think it is.
So it's the third Thursday of
third Thursday
of every month?
Of every month.
Okay.
At least until April's over. And once April's over, we're going to see how it goes. And if everyone's still stoked on it, then we'll keep going.
That's nice.
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now, so I don't screw. Yeah, third Thursday. Yeah, it's a really cool place. It's super low key. It's kind of in the round a little bit.
All right.
There's free beer.
Really?
Yeah.
Is there a cover?
Why don't you start with that?
$5 cover, and there's coffee you can buy, and then there's free beer that they bring in. So
that's the opposite of an AA meeting.
Yeah. I need more info about the free beer. Now, $5, and is it unlimited, or do they give you one?
Until they run out, it's unlimited, yeah.
Wow. Is it draft? Is it in bottles?
Bottles.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm way more important than the comedy.
Yeah. It's
Trent
great.
Davis I've seen, but okay, I'll be there.
Yeah, it's fun. So March 23rd, it's 8 o'clock, or sorry, 7:30, $5 to get in, and there's no item minimum or anything. It's just $5, and then you get in and you sit down. And you can bring food in, bring outside food in.
Oh,
and
stuff that's like great.
That.
And call up KPBS and tell them you want to see the second season of
Well,
Film
we just
Diego.
Finished filming a new pilot for KPBS that I did pitch and Ooh. I did come up with, and we filmed, and we're turning into them March 1st. Hopefully we'll know within March if they pick it up.
What's
for
that?
A series. It's called Get a Job. And it's kind of like Dirty Jobs, but it's not dirty. So it's like, it's basically me going around San Diego and doing different jobs.
Oh, wow.
So the first one we did was about mixology. So it's like me mixing drinks and making fun of mixologists.
Okay.
And it's pretty fun. And so we filmed it, and it's a little 10-minute segment. And hopefully that gets picked up. And then we'll see what happens. We also just got greenlit for a pilot for a sports show. That's going to be happening on the KSDY channel with Fale and the Tonight in San Diego folks. So, yeah, a lot of stuff happening in the next few months. But right now, go buy my album. Please, will you just go buy it?
And go on the internet.
It's on Amazon.
iTunes. And those are the places, Spotify or whatever. But it's called An Evening of This. And basically, the premise of it is that when I started doing comedy, I only did one-liners. That's all I did.
Right.
And so for
I would like to quote my favorite from you.
Sure.
Which was, I would love to live back in the days of Adam and Eve. Because, hey, no ghosts. Yeah. I still remember that one. I love
Thank
that
you.
One.
Thank you. Norm MacDonald actually quoted me a joke one time that I did. And it was one of my favorite moments of my life. Which was nice. The one where I said... I bought my 11-year-old cousin a hat that says retarded on it for Christmas, and he's like, hey, I'm not retarded, and I'm like, that's not what your hat says. Norm MacDonald telling me that joke to me was my favorite thing ever. But anyway, it was all one-liners for years and years and years, and then I just got bored writing one-liners, and I didn't want to do it anymore, so I started doing just pretty much crowd work and like longer bits, like the beer bit and stuff. And anyway, so I decided last year that I would record all of my one-liners that I've ever written in one night, and I would record it and then put it out.
And then retire them?
And then retire them.
Oh, that's cool. I was going to ask if you retire them.
So I don't ever bring them out unless the only time I bring them out is if, like, the crowd is just dead.
Yeah.
And by the time I get up, like, I know.
Nuclear option.
I know that I can get one or two. If I get one or two of those one-liners out right away, I know I can get them
you
all
can break
back
them.
Involved.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's almost like a little trick.
Yeah.
But if, other than that, man, they're all done. I'm done with them, and they're all there on the CD. The digital download.
The digital download, that's right.
So it's like 45 minutes. I did edit some out because of just technical issues mainly.
Sure.
Which is unfortunate. But the most offensive ones are in there. So
that's good.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
Well, let's call it a week. This is Ryan, and by the way, I cannot wait to use the fact that we had an Emmy winner on this show to get better guests.
Yeah, there we go.
This is Ryan for Not Dave Gallins, Bobby, Dallas McLaughlin, and all the puppets of Yo Gabba Gabba, saying see you next week, Cruising with the Twos.
I'll fucking slit your throat.
Ooh, yeah, time passing by. Ooh. Motherfucking time is passing by.